Hello, everybody, and welcome to the Q&A episode of Weekly Manga Recap for November 2015. I'm Nick. This is Chris.
Did you ask if this is Chris?
No.
I thought you asked if this is Chris. I was like, I don't... And no one's ever asked me before. Am I really, when you get down to it?
This is Chris?
Question mark? Who am I in a call with? No, that's Chris. How's it going, everybody? I say to the people who can't actually respond. that was the moment I paused. You could listen back. I paused for you at home to be like, hi, Chris, and Nick. You might not have had time for and Nick, and it's fine. I'm the only one who actually really cares about you welcoming me because
Maybe some of them speak very quickly and like, hi, I'm doing fine, Chris and Nick.
Yeah, how are you guys doing? Hey, Chris, Nick, and it's real quick, and I'm like, you succinctly dashboard that.
You guys knew what we wanted you to do. Good job, buddy.
I'm very impressed with our audience, Nick. It's like it's just one dude at home who's just like, yay! I think one dude at home, like, as like the podcast is playing, like, and how are you guys doing? Pause, and all that happens is a loud fart sound. It just continues as the only interaction with that scene there was.
Oh, boy. So, do we actually want... I actually have a question prepared this time.
Yeah, no, I have a question, too.
Good. I guess I'll go first this time, because I totally dropped the ball last month. Chris...
Yes.
What is your least favorite household chore to have to do?
Least favorite household chore? Are we talking all year round, or could seasonal be a factor?
It can be seasonal if that's what's weighing on your mind right now, but I just mean in general.
Because I cannot stand... I used to love it, but I cannot stand shoveling snow now.
Is it because you lost all your protective layers of fat?
Yeah, now I'm a complete
that's
bitch.
Like a recurring that's like a recurring thing for you.
It's really bad. I hate it because I'm like, I hate it when someone bitches about the same thing over and over again to me. But God, I cannot help but like every time I feel slightly cold, I'm like, I fucking hate this goddamn season now. So I cannot stand the fucking just shoveling snow is just awful. It doesn't matter how much equipment I put on. I still feel cold, and I get bitter and angry and sad. But outside of that, I'm trying to think what I really can't stand doing right now. Because I actually am one of the few people who doesn't mind doing chores for the most part. It's kind of like a place for me to kind of like zone out.
Yeah, just, you know, figure something out while you're doing a physical task that doesn't require all your mental capacity to do.
Yeah, like, you know... Like, when I'm alone in the house, when everyone else is gone, for whatever reason, I'm just the only person in the house, everyone's like, oh, that's the moment where you get in your underwear, you do that Tom Cruise, like, slide and fucking, you know, living room, I'm like, no, I clean. Like, I don't know, I really like being able to clean, and no one's gonna come up to me, I just get shit done, it's great. But I guess if there's one I don't like, I don't like cleaning the sink. I don't know, like doing dishes.
Really?
It's not bad, it's not hard or anything like that. I just don't like my hands feeling very, like, wet and shit like that. It's just not...
See, I don't mind doing dishes, but the one thing I can't stand is I just hate yard work. Just fucking yard work is the worst, because you just get so fucking dirty, and you fucking mess your hands up. It sucks. It sucks so bad, and I hate doing it, and unlike in places where there are seasons. Down here in summer 24/7, 365 Florida, it is always a time to go outside and fucking rake the leaves or fucking pull weeds or do this and do that. Just like, it's never ending. The plants are constantly growing and you have to constantly tend to them. And I fucking hate it. It makes my hands hurt and they get all dirty and nasty.
There's certain yard work I don't mind. Like, I love mowing the lawn. I've always liked it. I could just throw a podcast on and I just move and that's it. I always say that's another time to, like, zone out. But I will completely agree with you. I hate the shit out of weeding. My sister loves it. She's excited now because she's closer to me. So she's excited because when summer rolls around again, she'll be able to weed our garden. And I could not be more excited that someone's going to do that for free because I cannot stand it. It's so tedious and mind-numbing. And she's, like, dedicated to it. I'm, like, the guy, I, like, grab a weed and I just rip it out. She's like, no, you have to get under the dirt to get all the roots out because some are left behind. I'm like, this fucking world sucks. This is all the responsibility that has been thrust upon me from having a garden now. I don't want this. Can I just replace this with, like, plastic plants?
When I get really frustrated, I'm constantly telling people, it's like, we just need to pour gasoline on the entire yard and set it on fire and then just be done with it. And it's like, but you can't do that. It'll look ugly. I don't fucking care. Then you'll never have to deal with it again. Just make it sure that it's like a desolate wasteland that will never grow anything, and you'll never have to grow weeds or tend anything ever again.
It actually is going to look pretty awesome for a hot moment. You'll have like the most metal house on the block for a little bit because your garden's on fire, just shooting flames in front of your house. It'll die down. It might not look as cool, but that's for like a couple minutes. It is going to be the most awesome house on the block.
Pave over everything with concrete, why don't we?
Yeah. I have a question.
That was my question for you. So yeah, go ahead.
I have one for you. This is actually topical, Nick, because this news just broke today. Rumor has it that Star Wars is retiring. It's no longer going to be featuring any merchandise involving the Slave Leia bikini. What say you, Nick?
So that means that they won't like release collectible figures.
Won't do action figures. Won't be doing any merchandise on it. Won't be comic books aren't allowed to depict that scene or her in the outfit. All I guess there's even like no Leia in any sexually kind of suggestive situation or image or pose or anything like that. They're just going to distance themselves from it as much as possible, it seems like, at this point.
Well, if they're doing it as something like, I guess, like a feminism type of thing or a sexual equality type of thing, then I totally understand it. Mm-hmm. I'm of the opinion that unless there is very, very good reason for something, you shouldn't whitewash your history. You shouldn't pretend that certain things didn't happen. Like, you know, like whenever there's, you know, those Looney Tunes cartoons or Tex Avery cartoons and stuff that had racial humor in them that are not cool now. But, you know, if they show them now, they'll just have a disclaimer in front of them that says, hey, these were the times, guys. These cartoons did things that, you know, were considered acceptable then, but we can't just go around pretending that this stuff didn't happen. You know, that's because, you know,
they're like, back in these days, it was fine to have a character with big buck teeth and slanty eyes who talked in an Asian accent.
Or it was fine for, you know, the guy to put on blackface and puff his lips out and say, oh, massa, and stuff like that. It's not cool now, but if we pretend it never happened, then we'll never learn from history and stuff. Or if, you know, a guy murders his family, then pretend he didn't. Yeah, no. But I can understand if they are specifically because, you know, it is a different generation, is a different mindset and stuff, and they're trying to promote, you know, a new set of movies and stuff. And one of the main characters is a woman.
The main character. It's
right.
She's playing Daisy.
Daisy
Ridley. She's playing the lead.
She's like in the center of the poster and everything now, right?
Yeah.
So yeah, I totally understand if they're like, oh, this is how we want women in our universe to be seen now, as opposed to all sexy in front of the hut and stuff. Then I totally understand that. I think that if they are doing it for that reason, then yeah, I get them doing.
I think that's what they're going for, because, you know, they are going to have a female character as the main character in this movie. And I guess Carrie Fisher recently came out and basically was like, hey, you know, indirect advice to you, Daisy, but, you know, fight the pressure to wear anything revealing. You know, you don't have to make yourself a slave like I was or anything like that. And I'm all for it. You know what? It is what it was. You know, we don't need that anymore. I think we definitely derive more enjoyment out of it. But at the same time, I'm still, in a way, glad that the outfit existed, because it is, like, one of those weird pieces of just, like, nerd culture
that
I can't comprehend being without. And I'm like, we easily could. There's nothing that would change. But I'm just like, I'm kind of glad we have it, in a way, though. I don't know. It's like, I don't know, it's like the James Bond tux or like the Batman utility belt. Like, it's just one of those, like, iconic pieces of, like, an outfit or something like that. And I'm just like, oh, that'll transcend time. Because this isn't going to stop it existing. It's just going to stop Disney and Star Wars from doing anything with it. If you go to a convention, You will still see 40 slave Leias, and at least half of those, maybe a little less, will be dudes, but it's still going to exist out there. You just won't see anything official from Star Wars on it.
For my money, by the way, I always thought Leia looked better when she was in the first movie with, like, the freaking bun hair and stuff. Maybe I'm just weird.
I mean, I always felt like it was okay, but hey, Padme in Attack of the Clones, in that white outfit, there you go. That's where it was at.
Bear the battle damage midriff. Yeah.
I think that was one of the most flagrant examples of battle damage I'd ever seen in something that wasn't a manga, too.
Yeah, by the way, that is probably actually more... Okay, at least there was an excuse for why Carrie Fisher was all dolled up and sexy while strangling Jabba, okay? It was because he was trying to humiliate her while she was his prisoner, as opposed to, oh, the tiger thing clawed me, but it only managed to rip my clothing as opposed to mauling me.
Yeah, it was like, it did, like, get the skin, but, like, only enough to be like, oh, those are, like, acceptable scars.
No, she's not going to have to, like, get that treat or anything like that.
No, there won't be scars.
It's sexy blood.
There won't be stitches. That would be illsies. But it's enough to be like, oh, she's been through things. And, oh, hey, look, it also took enough to just take the midriff of that outfit off.
So maybe in another 3 years when we're making Star Wars Episode 15 or something, it'll be like, we are getting rid of the Padme battle damage.
I'm like, no! It's me, 80 years old. I'm like, no, god damn it! With my cane hitting the floor. You fuckers gone too far, heart attack!
I hope you're not doing that when you're only 50 years old, dude.
It's gonna be a hard 30 years, Nick.
Oh, God. And now people are discussing about how the entire first movie was built around what became an incestuous storyline.
Yes. Yes, it was.
It's almost like George Lucas didn't know exactly what he was doing with the franchise when he made the first movie.
I assumed he had it all written out on, like, a...
Well, he did have it all written out, but the thing changed substantially because different people came on to make it, and also he changed it from two movies into, like, six.
So. Yeah.
Anyway, we've got other stuff to talk about. We did have a podcast completely unrelated to yard work and Star Wars to talk about. But
those are the best.
Yeah, you guys have sent us in questions, and hopefully we're going to make our way through a whole bunch of them. Yeah.
So, all right. Do you want to start, or you want me to start?
Oh, you can go ahead and start.
All right. So we're picking up from where we left off. We're in the end of September with these questions. Hopefully, mm-hmm. we can work our way through September, October, maybe get into the ones we have in the beginning of the month and be just about caught up. I don't know if we'll get all the way through it, but we should get pretty close. So we're going to start with an email here from Christopher Chow. Says, "Dear Chris,
we already did this one.
Did we?
Yep.
Who did I say?"
Well, I said Satellizer, and I would take her to, you know...
Oh, okay, that's right. That's why we stopped it. I didn't pick anybody, because your answer made me sad.
You can do it now.
No, let's just go by bye.
I remembered how sad you made me, and I'm sad now.
Oh, we're going to go to... This is an email here. This gentleman doesn't look like he left a name here. But he says, "Hello, Chris and Nick. Greetings from the distant land of Ukraine. I have questions for you."
Ukraine is no joke, yeah.
I know you probably answered about revisiting series that have been reviewed. I know the answer is most likely not, but what do you think of continuing reviews of series that either A, you liked, B, ended since then, or C, you felt hadn't gotten to the core of the story? Likely suggestion would be Spirit Circle. Spirit Circle, Assassination Classroom, or Good Ending?
I'm actually not too enthusiastic on doing that. I mean, I'm not going to say it's like, oh, no, we'll never do that ever. But I feel like, you know, if you have to go back and say, like, oh, well, this has ended now, then, well, okay, it ended. I mean, that doesn't necessarily change our interpretation of it, though.
I think it might change more based on what happened in the story since then. And especially how much time really happened, because we read a good portion of Good Ending, and even though the series went longer and then ended and we didn't cover that, I feel like there's not all that much that if we reread it all, we'd really get out of that extra bit that you didn't already get from our original review. Maybe something like, I don't know, yeah, again, I don't know about Spirit Circle. I guess, what was that one? It was like long strips, Tower of God or something like that?
Tower of God, yeah.
Yeah, that was one that I think went significantly longer, so maybe something like that might have more merit, but I think something like Spirit Circle, which I think we've read, like, what, 75% of the entire series or something like that?
Because at the point we stopped at, he was about to go and discover, like, the last life of his, I think.
Yeah, so, I mean, that might be something worth, like, on, like, a footnote if one of us reads it and be like, hey, yeah, I finished, you know, Spirit Circle, and hey, it was pretty good. I did that back in the day when Holy Land finally finished. I was like, hey, I finally read through Holy Land. What a weird ending, but it's pretty cool. And, you know, it's kind of it. But like a full review thing like that, I think it might fit more for something that has a substantially long amount of material delivered after we did our initial review of it.
Hmm. Yeah, I mean, you know, something like, because we've given, you know, thought to the idea of doing like an arc of JoJo occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, something like that where it's like, okay, you know, we can read through this in chunks and kind of update ourselves on that. Something like that as opposed to, oh, well, good ending ended. It's like, okay.
Yeah.
We read through a great amount of that already, so. But yeah, I mean, it's not going to say it's like it's not going to happen for other stuff, though.
True that. Second question here. What are your take on Bakugo? He was the reason I almost thought of reading this series. I started as Stephen King level crazy ass bully and literally tried to kill Deku during one of the training tasks, and it was never properly addressed by the teachers. He's pretty enjoyable now, but I feel like the transition from psychopathic bully to chaotic good happened mostly behind the scenes. Is it just me? No, I don't think it's actually you. We've noted it before that Bakugo, when he's at his most extreme, is kind of uncomfortable with Deku. Most recently, there was the chapter kind of when they started the pair-ups where it really felt like he was like a step away from just strangling Deku to death. And not to spoil what, you know, basically happens this week, but the two of them are working out and they're teaming up and there's enjoyable qualities that, but it does feel like there's a weird transition between the two Bakugos that I feel like we're not entirely seeing, or the writing just kind of changes between them both. I don't harp too much on it because Bakugo generally is a fun character when he's not interacting with Deku, and that's kind of what I've experienced Bakugo more as, you know, just brushing his teeth, screaming die plaque or something like that. But I do feel like his development with Deku has been a little inconsistent.
I feel like maybe Horikoshi had got a different idea for the character after he had first conceived him, and maybe he realized that if he was going to be, you know, a permanent fixture in the story, he couldn't constantly be the type of character that he was when he was around Deku, because he wouldn't mesh well with the tone of the series otherwise, you know, capable of being funny when the situation is appropriate and also super serious and dramatic when the scene was appropriate for it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that probably has to do with it. But yeah, I mean, I think that seeing Bakugo in those scenes where he is not actually interacting with Deku is probably more of what we'll get after he and Deku have kind of buried the hatch a little bit. That's just my go on it.
Stephen King have a lot of crazy ass bullies in his. I feel
it's
like
it's considered a cliche of his that if there is a, you know, if his story focuses on children in any way, then there are ridiculous bullies in it in the story as well. I think.
I guess I haven't experienced enough Stephen King to notice that one yet. But my main experience of Stephen King are basically from Simpsons Treehouse of Horror parodies of movies that his books that have been made. So I'm like three generations away from not understanding it. Last one here.
Degrees of separation, sort of.
Yeah. Last one here. More request than a question, but Chris's thick Russian accent that Juvia had in some bathing fairy tale chapter stay with her, at least pop up from time to time. It's super enjoyable, and she didn't have many lines anyway. Yeah, sure. If we do a weekly manga recap lives on a fairy tale chapter, or if Juvia has some epic moment in the series we want to cover, we'll do the Mother Russia voice for her.
Russian accents are very fun to do.
Indeed they are.
Yeah.
Comrade.
Alright, next question comes from Ginger Straw Hat. It's couple of questions. It's obvious that seinen series can do things that shonen cannot, but can you guys think of things that shonen can do that seinen cannot? I would say
have friendships solve problems.
Well, Sandy can do that too, but I think that it is more that Shonen can more easily do things that are, you know, intended towards that kind of audience or intended for that kind of tone than Seinen can. I think that you can, you know, establish a universe that is in a Seinen series where, you know, that kind of stuff, yeah, you can pull it off. But it is easier to do it in Shonen because it is more expected. Seinen is, you know, intended for a more mature audience, and it's intended to have more mature themes, generally speaking. So there is the expectation that, oh, it's got to be more serious. So it can't just be all about friendship winning the day or super power-ups and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. You can still do it, but it's just a little bit... You kind of have to take more time to do it. It's not just something that people expect you to do.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think I nailed it. I don't have anything to add to that.
Okay, great. Two, do you guys think that maybe it's the right time to do another How We Would Fix episode of WMR? With Toriko being a shell of its former glory, you could make a Toriko episode, or maybe one on Fairy Tail. Yeah, we haven't done one of those in a very long time.
That was also, though, at the point where we did every weekly manga recap episode with a topic. Mm-hmm. So those were a couple episodes we did when we didn't have, like, a manga recommendation or, like, some, you know, like, a manga genre-centric topic to do. So I don't know if we necessarily do something exactly like that. And it's... I'd have to listen to it again, because I feel like we had a defense for the way that title sounds, because it's super douchey when I hear it, right, like, how we'd fix Toriko, us, non-published authors of anything.
I do remember us doing that, yeah. It's like, we're not saying it's like, oh, you know, we know exactly how this is going to go, we know exactly what you should do, and so on and so forth. We're just kind of, you know, talking about what we think are the flaws and how you would stuff.
Yeah, like how we'd basically handle... how we'd address it if we were the ones writing it, not necessarily that these are any of the right answers.
Basically, we took the How We Would Fix concept and then talked about it as humbly as possible with a title like that.
I feel like I had to use the word fix for a character limit or something like that. Like, I had to have other word. I was like, there's gonna be a less douchey way of phrasing this, right?
Not with any other three-letter verb, dude.
I feel like there's a, like, if I ever meet Kishimoto Sensei, like, that's, like, the moment he's gonna be like, oh, let me just Google, how you'd fix Naruto, eh? And I'm like, oh, I'm so sorry, sir. No, your series is really good. Just not Kaguya. That's why he's driving off. I'm like, no, wait, I needed to ride. I don't know what scenario I was in. I just assumed somehow I'm somehow stranded in the Arizona desert.
And only Kishimoto can save you because apparently he is there.
He was some reason driving in the Arizona desert and stopped. I'm like, Kishimoto Sensei, no! I'll starve!
So how did you end up here? Did Kaguya strand you in the desert dimension?
Well, she said it and sent me to the acid dimension like anybody else. Woo! Oh, I really hosed myself.
Oh, God. That was a really good singer, but I really shouldn't have used it.
Oh, what a fool I was.
Anyway. Yeah, I don't know if we would do that, necessarily. Because, honestly, I think whenever we get going on stuff, we just tear into it anyway. So, yeah. Third question. I've picked up all the printed editions of World Trigger available. Good.
Congratulations.
And I have to say, I don't understand a lot of the early hostility toward the series, as in our hostility towards it. Do you guys still hold the same resentment for the early chapters of World Trigger as you did initially? Chris, I know you have a lot of those you know, early volumes and stuff. Mm-hmm. So I think that you can offer more insight on this than I can.
I think I basically have answered this one before, because I mentioned that, yeah, I've picked up the volumes. I have all 7 digital volumes that are out right now, and I haven't read the 7th one yet, but I'm through the first 6, which is basically, like, up to the first little bit of the invasion arc. I think it's basically, like, up to the point where Kitora gets turned into a cube, and then, like, Konami Squad shows up. And it's really good. I honestly, reading it again, I think the beginning of World Trigger was something that we were maybe harsher on than we probably should have been. Although I guess we could slightly justify it as when you're viewing it in that vacuum back in the day, maybe you can't see a lot of these places it's going to go. I'm going from it with the hindsight of being like, oh, I know where it goes from here, and I can see where all these small elements they introduced here add up later on and become a payoff or something like that. But just reading it again, I enjoyed the start of the series again. It has a couple hiccups, I think every series does, but it's not anywhere near as bad as I remember it. If you get the chance to read it again, especially if you're a fan of where World Trigger's gone to now, I would definitely recommend picking up the volumes and giving the series a reread and seeing how you enjoy it, because I got a lot more out of it going through it a second time.
I do think that sometimes we're also kind of guilty of being ourselves too much. If we get into kind of a role of thinking things about a series, it may be a little difficult to break out of that, you know? We get used to saying certain things about a series, and then it becomes kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy unless something really big happens to break our, you know, trend of thinking, reacting ways to a chapter and stuff.
So, like, God forbid if there was, like, a compelling character twist in E-Robot, like, seven chapters in, we would have never taken it seriously.
Well, that series did get canceled.
Did it even get to seven chapters? I don't know.
I think it ended at, like, 12 or something like that. Yeah, it, yeah. That, we gained a lot of credibility calling that one out for a
while. Yeah, I was like, we nailed that one, Nick.
Oh, God. That one improved our batting average, and we needed it, like... But, you know, I mean, like, you know, we're so used to just being like, I didn't fucking understand what happened in Toriko this week. It is so confusing, and it keeps jumping around, and I don't know why it goes back into flashback in order to explain this thing that it explained without the flashback that was only necessary because it jumped away from the action that was leading up to it before, and, like, if there was a completely coherent and very important chapter of Toriko where something happened that was very important, then it would be like, oh no, you know, what, how would we react to that? Would we just be like, I didn't understand this because we are so used to not understanding it, or what? You know?
That's like right on the hitting the head on the nail. I was like, this is a euphemism. I don't fucking words. We'll just throw out there.
Well, technically speaking, if you hit the nail on the head, that means you are hitting the head that is on the nail.
Yeah. So I nailed it. You could say.
Ah, right on the head.
Yeah. But no. When it comes to Toriko, like, reading it each week, if I'm trying to grab, like, if I spot something, I'm like, okay, maybe this is a coherent chapter. I'll try to. Like, really kind of focus on it, but there's probably a lot of important plot details that I'm just completely missing because I just cannot focus in, and it's because that perception's come in that I'm like, Toriko is just become an incomprehensible mess, and it's really tough to shake that mentality from it week to week.
Mm-hmm. I mean, there are definitely times when we're like, oh, actually, you know what, I like this chapter of Bleach, or I thought that Fairy Tail was actually legitimately good this week, as opposed to I get to make a bunch of jokes about how shameless the fan service is and stuff like that. I like that whenever we have those moments where a generally bad series does buck the trend and offer something really good. I like that because I like good manga. I like us doing this show, but I would prefer if we had good manga as opposed to stuff that we could crack a bunch of jokes about all the time. Essentially,
we find ways to crack jokes even on good manga too.
Yeah, because it's manga. It's shown in manga, and stupid stuff happens all the fucking time. So, yeah, I mean, it's like if we had more enjoyable reading material, we would prefer it. And we try to enjoy stuff, but sometimes we do fall into the habit of oh, World Trigger. Oh, he made duck faces again, Chris. You know how many duck faces he made this time? I counted, and that's all I have to say about the chapter. He made 9 duck faces. Let's move on to the next
scene. Yeah, let's get on to One Piece now.
And then eventually, about 20 chapters, someone's like, actually, I really like this. Maybe we should give this a shot. And then eventually it became consistently one of our favorite series. So, in our defense, we changed our minds.
Yeah, we nailed it.
It never be said that we aren't capable of changing our opinions on something, because we have had to do that a number of times and stuff.
Yes.
Your turn.
All right. This one is from, and I apologize in advance because I'm going to get this one wrong. Animikian. Animikian? I think that's it.
Animikian, I think.
Animikian.
It's like anime or animation at the beginning.
What's the Ikian?
I don't fucking know.
Ikean? And in IKEA.
Social psych, yeah.
That's still one of the best parts.
I can't believe I came up with that.
It was so on the spot. I was like, Dick, you should audition for Saturday Night Live.
He's like, no.
Hi, Chris and Nick. Now that you don't seem to be posted on CA, where do we put our random thoughts on episode other than letters directly to you? The Patreon page, perhaps? First, let's say we're not off CA. I haven't posted our videos on CA since Blip went down, basically because I don't have anywhere to put them that I could reliably do anything with. But once the podcasts go video, our goal is to put them up on YouTube, and at that point, you'll be able to comment there, but my hope is then at that point to also then get it going back on That Got the Glasses again. I still need to talk to some of the guys up in charge to make sure everything's kosher on that, but I believe it is. But regardless, there'll still be the YouTube page no matter what. And yeah, the Patreon page also is a place where you can leave comments or anything. If you have any feedback for the show, if you have any thoughts of the show, if there's something really funny you just want to post on there, by all means, you can leave it there. And on also, as mentioned in here, our email as well, you can send them in directly. Goes on to say, I'm writing this while listening to Q&A Extravaganza 6, and I'm right there with you on the Muppets. Unfortunately, they are dear to my childhood, but the only thing that would make me go out of my way to watch it would be introducing Skeeter.
Skeeter is in the new Muppets show.
And I will note, Nick, I have watched, I think, 4 episodes of the Muppets now.
Mm-hmm.
It's not a bad show.
It's not bad. It's not.
It's weird at points. It's legitimately funny at times. There are some really sharp jokes on it. It's strange, and there's a little bit too much of a reliance on the celebrity cameos, which I have to feel some of them, which is just like, hey, Reese Witherspoon, how about we just dump a truck full of money on your lawn? She's like, sure, I'll act with puppets for a couple hours and make a crap ton of money for it. But I will say, I think it's a show that if it gets renewed and keeps going, it's one of those ones that'll kind of work those kinks out and get better with time. It's not the traditional Muppets by any stretch, but it's still funny enough that I'm able to be like, yeah, I'll buy into this and keep watching.
It is weird that like the celebrity cameos I've enjoyed the most have been like Josh Groban and Jay Leno.
Yeah.
Jay Leno was legit good on that show. It was so fucking weird.
I stole this candy dish from George Carlin.
You stole my candy dish from I stole from George Carlin. Weird. Yeah, I mean, like I said, I agree, because I've said the best. Yeah, funny jokes at times. But yes. I also think, like, it's missing something to, like, make it, like, consistently entertaining. I don't know.
Yeah, and there's also, like, weird points in it, too, where, like, it just does skits or things that are just strange. I'm still not entirely crazy about Fozzie Bear dating a human person. Thankfully, I feel like they saw that nobody liked fucking Kermit's girlfriend, and I feel like she hasn't shown up at all since the first episode. Like, there was just really one awkward scene where she shows up and talks to Kermit, and then she's never shown up again.
It would be fun if she had, like, some sort of, you know,
character.
Yeah, I mean, it's that thing, because if you wanted to not have Kermit and Piggy be, you know, romantically involved and stuff, that's fine. If you want to introduce different romantic interests for them, that's fine. But if you got a permanent love interest who is a new character for one of them, have them be funny.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So this is one last thing. Does capitalization or the lack thereof of your email affect your gain? I only ask because it sent my yearly request for Parasite. Well, first and foremost,
well, we did
enjoy Parasite. Second, I don't believe capitalization affects it at all.
It should not.
Yeah, so I should be good on that end. So thank you for the email.
All right. Next we have stuff from Squeeb Bloob. Squeeb Bloob is in fact gibberish, by the way.
I was up a couple nights wondering about that.
A couple of questions. Say that Hollywood gets the film rights for one of your favorite manga, and a studio announces that they'll make a live-action adaptation of it. What's the worst possible thing they could do to it? Dragon Ball Evolution.
I've been contemplating on the idea of doing a bonus pod top 10 that'd be like the top 10 manga to movie pitches, so I might save some of my thoughts for that. I haven't decided. I'm still contemplating the idea, but I feel like I'm trying to think, like, what would be the worst way they could end? Like, if you took One Piece and you're like, alright, well, This is a franchise a lot of people love. The Sliffy Kid's not going to do it. Let's make Zorro the main character. And we'll focus on... why don't we just rewrite the Skype arc? He fights a god. That's kind of cool. Lightning powers. Kids love lightning. We'd have explosions everywhere. And let's get Tom Hanks to play...
What?
Both of them. Or something. Like, I don't know. he's going to be Zorro. He's a really versatile actor. He's good at that. I don't know.
I'm Enel, the lightning god. I'm Zorro, the swordsman. I speak because of my heart when I've got a sword in my mouth.
No, actually, change that. We'll have Tom Hanks be Neru, but then you'll get Tyler Kitsch to play Zorro. Like,
who
some
the
dude,
fuck is Tyler Kitsch?
He has abs, and that's it. It's like Channing Tatum, but
well,
without
Zorro,
the charisma.
Zorro does have fantastic abs.
Yeah, he does. That's why they'll cast him. They'll be like, yeah, you dye your hair green for a little bit, and you know, it's done and done.
I think that the most important thing to, when considering a film adaptation, is getting the spirit of the original rights. I don't really care if you change a whole ton of it, like you're like reimagining or whatever. But
what Marvel does really well is they tend to redo a lot of the plot of it, but
right.
The main goal is to get the spirit of it right.
But if you were to, for example, take One Piece and be like, oh, it is a pirate series, so oh, they're a bunch of murdering scoundrels and oh, and they rape people and it's hardcore and bloody and stuff, and like, no. If you took One Piece and sort of made it like Pirates of the Caribbean, even.
Even Pirates might be a little too serious for the One Piece world, but yeah.
Yeah, even if you just, they're not even pirates. They're like, they go on the ocean and they have fun adventures and stuff. That would still be fine. Mm-hmm. But, for example, if you took a lighthearted cartoon, but they could also do serious stuff, and you remove all the color from it, and you have the main kid constantly be sad for no reason, and he's constantly buckling under the weight of everything, and he just wants to go home and be a normal kid instead of realizing, hey, I've got awesome powers and I can play around with my airbending skills. And oh, I already said what the movie is.
I feel like I knew where this is going.
I hate The Last Airbender.
Nicky, all right, we did a review of it. I thought that was therapy.
Yeah. So yeah, if you can change a lot of stuff, but if you violate the spirit of it, that's the worst thing you do about it.
Yeah.
Second question: if the two of you were the main characters in a manga, what sort of story and genre do you want this manga to have?
A romance manga. Who said maybe a woman would love me? No, I don't know.
Next question.
I'm like, no, maybe like a comedy or something like that. I don't want to be an adventure. I'm just going to die.
All right, third question. Since you mentioned it quite a bit during the time Gakuhotei was running in Jump, I mean to ask, what exactly are your thoughts on the Ace Attorney series? Is there a particular game or a specific turnabout that you liked? I'm not big into Ace Attorney. I haven't played any of it. I've seen part of a playthrough of the first game. Seems like a lot of fun, though.
It is an absurdly fun game series. If it's that kind of genre. If you can enjoy, like, the mystery story, where the mysteries are very interesting and dynamic, but absurdly contrived.
Right.
Where you're like, wow, a lot of things had to go right for this mystery to exist.
And things just kind of happen by coincidence and stuff.
Yeah. But I enjoyed it. I enjoy the Ace Attorney games immensely. I've played almost all of them. The only ones I've missed thus far are the Miles Edgeworth games. I haven't gotten a chance to play through those. And I think I'm still missing the final case on Apollo Justice. My favorite game, though, would probably be Dual Destinies, which was the 3DS one that had Athena Sykes in it. It had just such an absurdly, like... It's like Power Rangers. It's dorky as shit, but it's just cool in the right way at points when, like, all three of your attorneys are on the stand together doing, like, the objection point. But my favorite case to this day is the final case, and I think it's Justice for All, which is the second game, because it's the first case that really twists the entire premise on your head, because this is technically spoilers for those of you who haven't played it. But essentially, you go into the case thinking that you've got another innocent person you're trying to defend, and you are trying to nail down who seems to be the culprit, only to find out your client has been lying to you. He's the bad guy, and your last day in the case is you because you've built such a strong case about why this person's innocent, you have to spend the entire last day systematically trying to destroy it against your perfect defense. It's great.
So and you have to play against yourself.
Yeah, and the prosecutor knows what's happening as well, so they're trying to kind of help you with it. It's just one of those cool dynamics where you're just basically trying to get this guy who's a complete fucking monster, like do justice, but you can't just directly be like, well, no, it's him, because there's like an element in play that like your assistant's life depends on him getting out. So like the police are trying to like manage to find her first, so that stops being an issue. But it's just cool to basically be like, oh, I'm actually representing a guilty client now, finally. And I have to, like, it's not just like, no, I believe my client's innocent. It's like, I have to now undo everything I've spent the last 2 days doing. It's really awesome case. Oh, by the way, though, people in the chat are mentioning Danganronpa. I watched Sean Faust, Hope Within Chaos, play a little bit of that on his stream. That game's depressing as shit, and I never want to see it again.
It's kind of funny because I look on my Twitter stream, I see you guys talk about that every now and again, just how depressing it is.
It was so weird. It's like, hey, it's like Ace Attorney, except you actually kill each other in the game. I was like, oh! Like, it's actually like, oh, hey, it's a class of, like, 12 kids, and they murder each other, and you have to figure out who did it, and then the kids are just gone the rest of the game, because they're dead. And the ones who committed the crime get murdered anyway. I'm like, oh, this is so sad. I don't like this at all. I like the playful innocence of Ace Attorney, where after the bad guys get into jail, I just don't have to see the death penalty.
I assume that they have candy and they die from it.
They go to jail and they stay there forever like the bad, bad people they are.
And they have, there's a field that they can play.
Yeah, they can do that sign, play with dogs, it's great.
Alright. Next step.
Alright. No name, Harris, for, hey Chris and Nick. He's the person who said in the Hancock Luffy thing. He apologizes for that. To Nick, thanks to you, I'm slowly getting absorbed back into the Yu-Gi-Oh! Franchise after seeing your little Christmas duel, which, holy crap, that was a year ago. We need to, we have to have another Christmas duel at some point. I know you consider 5Ds to be among your favorites, so what would be your favorite duel and least favorite duel, and why?
I'm assuming that you mean in the 5D series, individual duels. The final one, the one between Yusei and Jack at the very end, I very much like that, although, honestly, it is inferior to pretty much any of their other duels. Like, the first one that they have that gets interrupted, really good. The one that follows up on that one that they have, really good. I really like Aki's deck, but she never got to have a really cool duel beyond, like, her first couple, where she was just squashing dumbasses. And then they were just like, she summons Black Rose Dragon. That is her strategy now. Even though, like, the entire rest of the time it was like, oh, she weakens her opponent's monsters with Black Garden, and she uses all these burn tactics and stuff. And she's like, no, that is what bad guys do. She is a good guy now, so she summons Black Rose Dragon. Even though none of her other monsters, like,
synergize with it.
No, it's, and then it's like, she has a Blue Rose Dragon now. That lets her use it too. It's like, well, does it work with any other plants? No! It can summon another plant instead of Black Rose Dragon, but we want her to use it to summon Black Rose Dragon. Fucking hell. It's not like there's a limited thing. I'm sorry, I'm going on a tangent.
You're like, I thought we were on the Yu-Gi-Oh! Podcast again.
Honestly, a lot of that stuff is fade from my memory, though. Let's see. Oh, some of the team duels were very up and down. Like, the Team Fire D's versus Team Unicorn one ends very stupidly after having a really awesome build to it. The Team Tayo duel, that's a really cool one. I really did not like the fucking guys who used the Acers. I forget what their team was, but I didn't like it because it was just a string of one-on-one duels, basically, instead of being really playing on the team duel concept. So, yeah, that's some of my favorites.
Also, a question for me to Chris. The official English dub of JoJo's Bizarre Adventure has been released. Have you seen it? No. Did you like it? Haven't seen it. And if not, who would you like to voice them? I don't know. I feel bad. I feel like the collective weekly manga recap community is holding their breath waiting for me to watch the JoJo's Bizarre Adventure anime, and I just haven't yet. But when part 4 comes out, I'm going to make it an effort to watch that guy. So I'll give you my feedback then.
All right. Next up from... Nope, not going to try. Sieg from Sieg!
It's Sieg, yeah.
Okay, it was, I saw the full name of this, I was like, nope. first question, do you have any favorite weapons from manga or anime? For definition, weapon is something tangible, held in the character's hands, and not a power they possess, unless the power manifests itself into a weapon, such as a Zanpakuto. Very nice clarification. So, for example, like, Natsu's fire is not a weapon, but Ichigo is Zanpakuto. Ooh. Let's see here.
I guess I've always liked Zoro's one sword, the white sword. I forget what its name is. It's the one he got from Kuina.
Right. The one he's had the longest.
Yeah, I've always thought that was kind of a cool looking one, but I feel like my real answer isn't going to follow. Can I pick a video game? It's not a manga at all. I'm sure there's been manga made about this video game franchise. Basically, I want the Megaton Hammer from Legend of Zelda. Specifically Ocarina of Time. I always thought the Megaton Hammer was the coolest shit in the world. I deliberately cheesed the system in most of my playthroughs of that game. Then I would beat the fire dungeon first.
Just
then
so you go back, have Megaton Hammer.
Yeah, then go back and do the forest dungeon, because I'm like, oh, now I can crush fucking Phantom Ganon's skull in with the Megaton Hammer. This is super sweet. I'd get that, the Iron Boots, I'd play Song of Storms, and I'd just walk around town with the Megaton Hammer stomping everywhere in the rain.
I am heavy, bro.
Yeah, I'm like, this is metal. It's like the nerdiest thing I could have done.
That's also supposed to be how you're supposed to wail on Ganon at the end of the game. Unless you know, went through all the trouble of getting the big Goron sword, which honestly saves you like a third as many hits. So you
But at the same time, you probably spent like an hour and a half trying to get that thing.
Right. You might as well just use the Master Sword and be able to use your shield while you're wielding your sword. My favorite in that game was always the hookshot.
So, hookshot's cool, yeah.
I mean, I just thought it was so cool. It's a grappling hook you can use as a weapon, and you never run out of arrows for it. So, yeah. Although it is much more difficult to use than just shooting stuff with arrows, because your arrows, for some reason, travel at the speed of light. Anyway, my actual favorite tag, let's see here. Oh, God. I had it in it for a second, but hang on. A lot of the Zanpakutos in Bleach, honestly, are really cool. I like Senbanzakura. I like, which is Byakuya's. I like Hyorimaru, which is Hitsugaya's.
Now, are you talking about their released form?
Yeah, the Shikas.
Okay.
I was partial to Hozukimaru, which is Ikkaku's, because it's a three-segmented staff, and so it's just cool. But
are you like a staff? Like, if you were to get like a traditional like Japanese like Eastern culture weapon, would yours be the staff? Would you like a Donatello kid?
I was a Leonardo kid, actually.
Okay, I was a Leonardo kid too, but I feel like you're going towards the staff.
I honestly would just go straight up, you know, katana wakizashi samurai armaments though.
Okay.
I mean, staffs are nice, and honestly, it would be more, you know, more difficult to hurt myself with it. I have all those weapons, you know, staff. You know, the most you can do is
bruise myself.
Yeah, worst you can do is kind of knock yourself in the head, like, unless you somehow manage to break it and then stab yourself with the splinters or something.
I took Taekwondo until I think I got to like a high blue belt, which is like a couple levels below where you'd start getting to black belt.
Mm-hmm.
And I was right at the level where we were going to start learning our forms with the I forget what they called it. It was a staff. I think there was a specific name for it. And I was always bummed because I lost interest in it, like basically like a level or two before you were going to start learning the sword forms. I was like, why didn't I stay with it for a couple more years just so I could learn sword techniques? And I know why now I didn't, because I haven't retained anything from Taekwondo all these years later. But at the time, I was like, that would be the one thing to hold on to. I could become like a sword master.
I took Taekwondo as a kid, too. I also have not retained very much of it, but the nice thing about it was I grew very awkwardly. Like, my limbs grew to be very long when I was growing up and stuff.
Like a Stretch Armstrong that just slowly was, like, returning back to its normal form.
Well, I'm still very gangly, But, you know, I suffer from the problem of, you know, my limbs got really long and I didn't know how to coordinate them because they grew so rapidly and stuff. So I was a very clumsy kid, and going to Taekwondo helps me to coordinate myself a little bit better. I am still clumsy, but I'm not nearly as clumsy as I used to be. And Taekwondo is partially to thank for that. Anyway, next question is, on the matter of powers, if you were given an unknown devil fruit in real life, would you eat it or not? Even if you chose not to eat it, you can't sell it or give it to anyone else. Huh.
Yeah, I feel like I'd eat it. I feel like there's not many devil fruits out there that are really bad to eat. You know, it's not like a Twilight Zone power, like I ate the fruit and it's like, oh, and you have the poop power, the poop fruit, and it's going to turn you into poop now. I mean, even Logias can control whether or not they turn into it, so even if I did get something I didn't want, for the most part, I can choose not to have it act. I mean, there's a couple fruits, I guess, out there that exist in the joke ones. Oda's made up in the SBS is like, oh, all your jokes suck now. But I think, generally speaking, it'd be better to have one than not, and all I really lose is the ability to go in water.
You know, I don't swim very much, so... And actually, it's specifically, like, seawater, too, isn't it?
No, I think it's any water, because there have been jokes either in the show or in movies or things like that where people have been taking baths and they basically have the same thing happen to them.
Huh.
I think it's any water is what it's supposed to be represented as. At least I think. I might be wrong on that, but I believe it's all water.
Have there been any devil fruit powers that they're like, you have to, like, live with a curse specifically? Other than, like, Choppers turning him, you know, human?
Some yes, because, like, Luffy can't turn off being rubber. Like, he's always rubber. If you punch him in the face, his head's gonna go swimming back. He can't control that not really happening. So certain paramecias are kind of like that. But, I mean, any Zoan, you have the ability to choose whether or not you turn into the animal. And all Logia, you have the option of choosing whether or not you want to become the element or something like that. So, I mean, there's a small portion of paramecias that are like that, where you would be in control of how your body is going to necessarily react to it. But in that same way, I think those are a very small minority, and even then you still get cool powers from it. I feel like I'd do it. I feel like there's not enough risk involved with it necessarily.
I feel like I'm too lame to actually do it, so...
Maybe you just wouldn't like the taste of the devil fruit.
Yeah, that's possible. If I recall correctly, Luffy did not like the taste of the fruit.
I think that they're all supposed to be, like, horrendously disgusting. But I'm not entirely sure on that.
Alright, next question.
This one is from Ginger Strahd again. Hey guys, want to know if you're still reading One Punch Man. You don't recap it and I get why. But I want to know your feelings on the fight between Saitama and the alien prince guy that shot him to the moon. I feel it was some of the best over-the-top action ever put to page, but what are your thoughts?
I don't really read it very much, honestly. I check it out occasionally, but I don't really read it loyally.
I read it for a while, but after it started to have those, like, very spontaneous and long breaks, I kind of fell out of the story. And there were points where there were, like, storylines going on. It's like, yeah, this is for the regular manga, but then this storyline is for the offshoot series that runs in this magazine or something like that, and I just had a lot of trouble following what the story was actually doing at that point. So even now that it's being issued regularly, I've kind of just fallen out of pace with the story, and I just don't have as much interest with it. I know the fight he's talking about, though, because that's the first guy basically who was able to take a punch from Saitama and not die, basically. But I don't really remember too much else about it, unfortunately, so Fred, I can't give too much of an answer on that one.
I'm glad that, you know, it's gotten popular enough to get an anime, though.
Yeah.
So now more people are, like, you know, jumping on, it's like, oh, this is the greatest thing ever, and it's like, we knew about this 3 years ago because we read manga instead of watch anime. Get on our level.
Are we hipsters now?
I knew about One Punch Man before it was an anime.
And then the people listening to us were like, I knew about One Punch Man before it got translated into English.
Like, shut the fuck up. You had to translate it in your head.
Yeah, no, I haven't seen a lot of people post images and GIFs of the anime, so yeah, glad to see it's getting some attention.
Alright. Next, we have questions from Cantarell. Two questions about Toriko. As we all know, Toriko hasn't been that interesting in the last 1.5 years. Ugh. Where do you think it went wrong, and how do you think it could have been prevented? I don't know.
That's tough to say. Where did... Because we weren't crazy excited about a good portion of the Bambina arc, but if you let me go back and have that kind of storytelling again instead of what we have now, I'd take it in a heartbeat. It wouldn't even be a question. I guess where it started to really go wrong was just in the start of this new arc, another arc. I can't remember what it's supposed to be called, but it's basically just gone wrong by switching and jumping about so much and trying to push this bigger story that... Because I think there was always a big story to Toriko, you know, this notion that there are Nitros out there causing an issue with it, and God will come out, and there was Neo, and this organization that had nefarious plans. But I feel like now that we've kind of found out what Neo's plan is, and all relates to, like, a demon, a Acacia's food demon, and all this stuff, I don't know, just kind of lost interest. It's gotten too much within its own mythos, too much in its world, and its own jargon and all that, so... I don't really know what to say on that, where it could have really been repaired. I mean, it's presumably where the story was going to go inevitably at one point, but I guess maybe it would have been better to have just slowly pulled this out over a series of arcs similar to, you know, Air and Pear, where it's like, yeah, well, you know, we'll fight the horse here, we'll have a little adventure, and maybe we'll fight a couple people, and, you know, then we'll go to the Monkey Island, do some stuff there, and it's, you know, Toriko and Sunny and Coco and Zebra and... Stuff like that, maybe if you kept up that kind of pattern going through the different locations, that would be alright, but I don't know. I mean, it may have already been kind of on that track that couldn't be stopped.
And also the second question is, after the most recent chapter at the time, although this was less than a month ago we got this, so most recent chapter, chapter 3 and 42, it seems like the manga is moving towards its conclusion even faster than before. Do you think Toriko will last longer than half a year? I don't know exactly how long Toriko is going to last. That stuff is very difficult to predict. But if it were going to end within 6 months, I think we would have heard about it by now.
It's worth noting that if it is ending, it would only be because Shirin Bokuro essentially doesn't want to do it anymore. Because it's not a series that has had issues in the rankings or anything like that. Even though we haven't liked it, Toriko's, I think its lowest basic ranking is like middle of the pack.
It's been middle of the pack lately. Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, that's not something they're going to cancel, especially for a long-running series, so unless your Guru wants to cancel it, it's not going anywhere.
Yeah, it's not going to be like, because, I mean, you know, look at the freaking Bleach, you know, it's been tanking. Like,
4 years of the last arc.
I mean, it's been tanking, and it's just been hanging around, though, because it's got so much clout in the magazine. Toriko's got a lot of clout, too. It was... you know, among the top series for several years, and it's probably going to be allowed to finish at its own pace at this rate, so long as it doesn't tank like Bleach, basically. So, I mean, I think that, yeah, maybe, you know, honestly, maybe that is it. Maybe Shimon Bakuro has gotten bored with the series and wants to get it over with. Maybe that's what's going on. I don't know. But if it is going to end soon, we're going to hear about it soon. It's not just going to end out of the blue.
Yeah. My question then?
Mm-hmm.
Alright, no name here either, but it says, hello again. Here's a Toriko question for you. The biggest thing I'm disappointed in another arc is that they made a big deal about Moon,
The black hole whales.
Yeah, obviously, now that Acacia's sewn up, the plot is slowly devolving into a massive trash can clusterfuck of a narrative. this will never be touched upon again, nor about the seven beasts it has under its dominion. Now, to note, this was sent in last month. Most recent chapters have shown that the moon is still a factor in the story. I think at that point it seemed like they were pushing away, but we are kind of returning back.
That's because we thought they were going to abandon that arc, and then... Oh, no, we're doing a flashback.
Yeah, we're kind of just going back to... But the person asked, it did give me an idea. Would you think a show based around power levels would become more interesting if there was a solid level that nothing can get past and it stays there through the entire series? As in, once a protagonist fights at that level, every other villain or monster they'd fight would be able to go down, but would focus on being a threat outside of their respective power level. Do you think a system like that could have saved Toriko's pacing? Basically saying, say that the gourmet capture level had a hard cap of 100. Nothing has ever existed that is more than 100, and you just play within that range. Well, could that have saved it? I don't think it necessarily can, because you're going to...
If you have a power level system of any way, eventually you're going to have to increase it.
It exists to be surpassed at one point.
Yeah.
Because you create the scale to build up a threat and then eventually surpass it.
Look at, like, long-running MMOs, like World of Warcraft. There used to be a level cap of, like, 70, and then became 80 or whatever, and they had this whole new expansion of stuff to accommodate the, you know, level-up system.
Lich King, Arthas, the leader of Northrend and the Scourge, he was the biggest bad guy of the Wrathful Lich King campaign, level 82. At this point, I think you can take mobs, like fucking squirrels and shit, from the new expansion, put them in his fucking, like, arena, and they'd probably beat him, because they just do that much damage. It's just a scale that gets broken to help kind of increase things.
You just said a bunch of words that I...
Basically, you took something that was the biggest, baddest dude at one point, and then you have to kind of continue raising the stakes so that the number keeps going up. So yeah, something's completely lame later on. Essentially seems better than that just by the power scale comparison. But I feel like power levels in general, the more you focus on them, the more you put a stock into them, the worse it turns out for you. I just watched a video. I was curious. It popped up in my recommended list. I think because we watched the Digimon movie, it was a list of the top 10 strongest Digimon. And I was like... I'm curious to see what this is. Nick, I've never seen anything more nerdy in my life. I was actively ashamed afterwards. I was happy because I'm like, I don't know any of the shit this dude's talking about. But they were like, he was like explaining, like, oh, it's not just, you know, you have your standard levels, but there's a level even past Mega that most Digimon can't even reach called Super Ultra. Which, of course, as just taught Ultra in the current version... Only a few Digimon can even reach it. It's sought to never even exist, but of course every Digimon on this list is on that level.
Super Ultra.
They have burst modes, and like, you know, I'm Charujomon X, because the regular version's not good. Absurd.
Have any of these alleged Digimon ever actually appeared in the anime?
Some of them have. A few seem to be video games, some seem to be manga, but a lot of them had some connection to it in some fashion. Do you want me to give you some of the names, see if you know any of these guys?
Go ahead.
Alright. On Kent. Alright, sorry, you guys heard a quick snippet of it. I will note this is Viewer Online 101, if you want to check out his video. I have nothing against him, I just think all these Digimon are so nerdy. Omega Armamon Burst Mode, Chronomon Holy Mode...
Chronomon sounds familiar.
Ultimate Chaosmon?
That sounds made up. Go ahead.
Agudomon, which was the one I was reading, which is like a Digimon that at its baby level can kill Megas.
Okay, that's bullshit.
Yeah, it killed Piedmon as a baby and then like just skipped into rookie form or something like that.
This sounds like fan fiction. Go ahead.
Mega Darkness Bagaramon.
Alright, that sounds stupid. Keep going.
Quartzmon.
That sounds actually like... reasonable.
Fang Longamon.
Weird.
Shakamon.
Sounds great.
Shakamon.
Shakamon!
Zed Millenniummon.
Okay.
And this is my favorite. This is the number one. Supposedly the strongest Digimon. I guess there's a zero on this list, Gaiamon. But this is the number one. Shoutmon X7 Superior Mode.
Shoutmon, isn't that... That's like... Isn't that like the main one in one of the...
Shoutmon, I think, is the... I don't know.
Shoutmon is... Yeah, he's like one of the main Digimon in one of the later series.
Cross Wars?
Yeah, the one that nobody likes, basically. No, yeah. Wait. I'm thinking of... What no, Crosswords says... Crosswords is like the newest one, I think. I'm thinking of the one before that. That is the one.
Oh, the one where they were like police officers, essentially.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, that was. I think that was Snagamon in that. It says this guy's debut was Digimon Crosswords the manga, and then Crosswords the Boy's Path Cross. So it had it, but
that's weird.
There's apparently a Shoutmon X 7 Superior Mode. I just need to see what it is. Oh god, it's ridiculous.
Digimon did start getting really weird when they were like, okay, this one is DNA, and this one is DNA Ultimate, but then it has a fighter form too.
That's where I was like, oh god, there's forms? Like, oh, immediately remember why I like Pokemon better, and then I'm like, oh wait, and then Pokemon introduced Mega Forms recently, so maybe not. Maybe all my childhood just exists to disappoint me eventually.
Oh, God. Yeah. Power levels, you can't... If you have power levels, you're eventually going to have to go past your supposed ceiling, basically. Yeah. All right. Next question. Again, Ginger Straw Hat. Sorry I keep sending in so many questions and suggestions, but I have another here for you. It's okay. You guys have voiced your opinions on several female leads in the series you cover, such as Sakura, Kitora, Orihime, and Lucy and Urza. I actually don't think Kitora can be considered the female lead, but anyway. But you guys have never really talked about Nami from One Piece. I would really like to know your opinion on her. She has always been my favorite character in One Piece in that way that you seem to enjoy Usopp. She is a coward character, and she does run away, but when she gets to do something cool, it is usually really cool, such as her double-figure fight in Alabasta, Enies Lobby fight with Khalifa. She's my favorite character. I'm afraid Oda has forgotten how to write her. She hasn't been able to do much since the time skip and seems to mostly be there for fan service alone. You did raise a good point about Nami not getting to do much, but I think that a lot of that has to do with the fact that, you know, she's not one of the major fighters in the group, and also she was just, you know, not around for the arc against Doflamingo.
And she's a woman, to be fair. Like, and that's not meant to be derogatory, it's just Oda doesn't do as much cool scenes for the female characters as he does the male characters. Like, case in point, Fishman Island arc, all the Straw Hat male characters got to have a big moment where they showed off their powers against, like, a special opponent, whereas Nami showed off hers against a crowd of mooks. I don't even know if Robin did anything. I think she did do something. It was like a dead slaver chair or something like that, like some, like, random thing. But another part of it, too, though, is just that in Punk Hazard and Dressrosa, she just hasn't had a primary role in it. I don't think necessarily that's like a doom to her character or anything like that, because I do agree their fights with Doublefinger and Khalifa are great, and she has a cool power set that I think is really interesting to see in play. It's like this cool, almost magical element, but, you know, very specifically science that exists within the One Piece world that I think adds a lot to it. And I think she'll have those moments more so later on. I feel like these next arcs might give her a little bit more focus. I feel like anybody who didn't wasn't in Dressrosa is due for that. But she also is one of the casualties of the fact that Oda is continuing to expand the story and have so many characters, and he only has so many things for different characters to do, so she hasn't gotten as much spotlight as she used to.
Right. Let's see here. I think that is... Yeah, that's the question. There's also recommendations in there, though.
Okay. Question here, then. Dear Chris and Nick... Do you guys think that with this digital age of manga publishing, series that are stuck in limbo might have a better chance now, like using Twitter and online petitions to get publishers' attentions and such?
Maybe, but don't hold your breath.
Yeah. There's no guarantee with anything. It's always worth a try to get your voice out there and let people know what it is you want, but it's also no guarantee that's going to happen.
Yeah. I would say it's probably more likely than not that it won't work, honestly. I mean, and unless something changes, you know, in terms of the way that social media is used for that type of stuff.
It is worth noting, though, that Shonen Jump in particular has been pretty good about that just recently. If you didn't hear about it, I think we mentioned on the show, but if you didn't, they're now going to be bringing over a couple sports series from Japan that people have been asking for a while. So Kuroko no Basket and Haikyuu are coming over to America, going to be English translated. So if there's a series that runs in Japan you like that you want to see translated and you want to see brought over to the English speaking world, you know, put your voice out there to make them aware that you want it, because that is how they gauge what to bring over and if they think it's going to be a worthwhile investment for them. Just note that there's no guarantee about it's going to happen, though.
Mm-hmm. All right. Okay. Next, from Daros. Question one. Nick, do you hate it when people ask you when the next Red Right to Left is coming out? You really bit that one guy's head off in the last Q&A. Yes, I do. Question two. Chris, do you still have that fuzzy hat that used to appear in those old title cards?
No.
Question three.
I threw it away.
Question three. What would you rather read? The Wolf Guy in Japanese Spider-Man Power Hour or Umi no Mi Sake Drop?
Nick, would you rather eat a soup that I took a dump in or that I pissed in?
Pissed in.
Okay. It's essentially like that question where it's like, I guess if I really, like, if you're desperate for an answer, I can dig into it enough. Both of these are just awful possibilities. I don't really want to consider that much because it's going to suck either way. I guess if I had to,
Fuck. Question four.
Yeah, I don't know.
Question four. Hey, Nick, when's the next Red Right to Left coming up? Fuck yourself.
Winky face.
Go ahead.
question here from Traburical Blitz. Hey guys, Sig Zeon.
We were done with this shit.
Hail Hydra, it's never done, Nick. And all the greens we usually do, just saying in questions for the next episode. Praise goes here. Question the first, how do you guys decide on the recommendations for each episode? Do you take a note each time a recommendation is sent and then decide then, or do you go back and decide the week you have to pick?
I basically decide week to week.
I mean, there have been a couple times we decide mid-episode, and we're like, oh shit, it's my pick? Oh, it's right, fuck this. Sometimes when I see an interesting suggestion, because I read all the emails when they come in, and if I see something that looks interesting when someone sends it a recommendation, I'll like put a note on it or something like that, like to keep it in mind. A lot of times it is just like I'll go through recommendations, just see one that seems interesting for, you know, whatever point we're at, you know, what we've read recently, and go off of that. So, second question.
I will say that seeing a recommendation multiple times does play a factor, but in general, more if multiple people are asking for it than if you send in the same suggestion over and over again. I'm not saying like if you send in the same suggestion over and over again that, you know, that means, oh, I will, yeah, and because also that improves the chance that I'll see the recommendation. I'm just saying, like, if I see it multiple times and multiple people send it in, that means that the chances improve.
Yes. Related to that, who has the primary access to the weekly manga recap email, and do you two check it regularly? We both have access to it. That's how we're doing it right now.
Technically, Chris set the account up and stuff, but...
Yeah. But, yeah, I check anything when it comes in, and I move all the questions over so we have them, like, stored up in a row to go through them, but we both go through the email.
Mm-hmm.
Question third. Now, you guys have your ambitions and dreams as to where you want to work in the future that you shared on occasion. Did I ever share that? Have I told people my hopes and dreams? Have I lied to you all?
Oh.
Huh. But if you were to change your career trajectory and decide to become part of the manga industry, what would you be aiming to become, and where would you like to work at?
Oh, God.
So this is on the purely fictional existence, like, we could just have a career in the manga industry. Like, it's just, let's ignore anything, like, you know, whether or not you have the qualifications for, the education for, you get, like, accepted for it. If you could have a job in the manga industry, what do you think you'd most enjoy?
I mean, I feel as if I would like doing, like, the editor work, mm-hmm. in terms of, you know, like, meeting with the writer and, you know, seeing if we can, like, punch up ideas and stuff like that. Being part of the creative process, but not having to be the main driving force behind it. I feel like that would be good. That could be fun, because there are times when I feel like I'm better at, you know, recommending improvements for stuff, as opposed to actually writing everything myself.
Yeah. Yeah, and it is like a... It's almost kind of in a similar vein to what we do now, where it's like we give our thoughts on what we're given, and, you know, that kind of is a way to do that in a more direct sense, where, you know, Kubo gives you his manuscript that week, you're like, just change all of this. None of this was right.
But let me keep all those pinups you drew.
Yeah, I'm going to keep these in my room.
Each of us have like a picture of Miura from Bakuman in our cubicle, and we're like, just a note that says, "Don't be this asshole."
Yeah, that's probably where I'd like dream position end up. But I'd be open with any real position in the manga industry. I think it'd just be fun to work for an industry you have a like interest in. I work for the state. There's no interest in that. I don't give a fuck about PennDOT. It's, you know, it is what it is. It's going to exist without me. So, but working in the manga industry, I'm like, oh, that's something that, even if the job's like, oh, I cleaned the toilets at the manga building. I'd be like, this is sweet. I see manga all day. And they don't yell at me for dressing up like Rock Lee when I'm cleaning out the toilets. This is a question for Nick, but Chris can answer it too. It's about Bleach, so I'm just going to leave this to you, Nick. Which character would you least expect to have a Bankai? Don't mean the most popular characters or characters with popular...
The question kind of changes as it goes on.
Like Masamoto or Kira, who get highly placed in popular Zanpakutō pose. I mean, if Iba and Kuwamura showed up in front of Yuuk and had a serious long battle with multiple chapters titled Doggy Hold My Hand, and Iba reveals he has a Bankai...
Doggy Hold My Bones.
And Iba reveals he has a Bankai, or if Hinamori goes up against Ishida, the Elite Stern Raiders, or Yugram... Yugram? Is that who...
Yugram, like Jugo.
Hoshwalds. And reveals she has a Bankai, too, that can go toe-to-toe with them. What would your reaction to at be?
Surprise, and wondering how the fuck we had gotten to this point. In terms of the original question, which character would I least expect to have a Bankai? First of all, a character without Shinigami powers, but that's a cop-out answer. Out of, like, the important characters we've seen, let's limit it to, like, captains and vice-captains. Obviously, we know the captains all have Bankai. Vice-captains, though, that's, like... First of all, I can't believe fucking Sasakibe had a Bankai. Omaeda, that would be surprising. Let's see. Third was Kira. Fourth was Isane. Oh, God, Isane with a Bankai would be fucking weird. Then fifth is Hinamori. I could actually see having a Bankai because we've seen her Shikai a fair amount. Rinji has one. Iba, fucking Nanao would be the one I would be most surprised to have all the lieutenants to have a Bankai because we haven't actually seen her fucking Zanpakutō yet.
I think it's a book. I feel like they saw like someone that's like her Zanpakutō is a book or something.
I think that's just a popular fan theory. And also, I don't think Nemu ever had a Zanpakutō.
I feel like at one point she did, but I think that would be the most surprising character to me, because I'm like, did he even design her to be, like, really a Soul Reaper?
Right. So, yeah, I mean, now knowing what we know about Nemu, I guess she would have been the most surprising. But honestly, like, in general, Nanao, I think, before I knew that. And then there was Isagi, and Yachiru, Nemu, and Rukia. Rukia we've seen as a Bankai, so. Yeah, I'll stick with that answer of Nanao because she never fucking fights.
Five. This is a question inspired by an episode of Super Larry's Brother podcast, but Nick can answer as well. Alright, you might want to grab some snacks, Nick. This is a long one.
Or
if you guys had the power to decide the direction of humanity's space settlement advancement, and assuming you had already built a lunar base that works just as well as the Terrain City, so proof of concept of space living is already successful, which of these options would you go for? A. Terraforming Venus by building sky cities that scientists at NASA suggested and spending centuries mining gas giants like Jupiter and causing long-term chemical reaction on the surface of Venus to create enough water, cool it down enough, and eventually make it habitable for humans. B. Melting one of Jupiter's moons, such as Europa, since it contains water, but requires building an artificial ozone layer to help warm the planet and compensate for the lack of natural sunlight. Or C. Decide the humanity's future in living in an environment of their complete and own creation and build space colonies in a known solar system. Nick, I want to note.
I love the continuation. Mars is not an option because it's filled with cockroaches and white supremacists. Also, kickstarting that planet's gravitational field is going to be a pain in the ass.
I just want to note, this heavy science-laden question, I believe, is prompted by a question I brought up on our Super Larry's Brothers podcast, was, would you go to Mars if it turned out 90% of the people there were hot chicks and you'd be just about the only eligible bachelor there? Essentially, like, would you go to Mars if the hot women there had no choice but to bang you?
Would you volunteer to be the guy in that one vault in Fallout?
Yeah, you're like the one dude who's just gonna get all the tail.
Venus.
Yeah. I'll go with you. You're pretty smart. And finally, question 6. In the spooky month of All Hallows Eve, have you changed your eating habits to be more spooky-based? Do you eat Halloween-themed foods?
What the fuck
does that? or do you try to ignore all that and keep on eating normal people food? Because he's brought up things like green ketchup and stuff like that. I tried to get the A1 burger, the black Whopper at Burger King that turned your poop green. I just wanted to try it. But they discontinued it before I could get it. I think because it turned your poop green. Beyond that, I don't get a whole lot of Halloween stuff. I don't like candy corn. I tried a couple pieces of like the candy corn flavored Hershey bar, and it was just horrendous. And outside of that, no, I don't eat the spooky food.
Hearing that it turns your poop green made me think, like, does that mean that, like, it's people have been, like, passing it so quickly?
No, it's just because the bun is black, but it's actually a very dark shade of blue because it just has a crap ton of blue food coloring in it. And when it kind of goes to your system, yeah, it just comes out making your poop green.
Okay. Because, like, your poop also can be green if, like, it goes through your system too, if it goes through your intestines too quickly because it's, like, soaked in stomach acid and stuff.
Yeah. Yeah, this one, it's just because of food dye.
Yeah. No, I don't change my diet for anything, honestly. The only thing that I really do is, like, you know, when it gets colder, I drink apple cider. When it gets around Christmas time, that means there's fucking eggnog that you can buy, and I drink eggnog.
You like eggnog?
Who doesn't fucking like eggnog?
A lot of people, Nick.
How could you not like eggnog?
You're the first person I've met who's liked eggnog besides myself.
Well, I'm also the first person you've met who doesn't like chocolate, I think, so...
No, my friend Frank also hated chocolate. When we were kids, I used to throw M&Ms at him.
I'm glad... Chris, don't take this the wrong way. I'm glad that we didn't meet each other until we were both
adults. No, I've never met people who like eggnog. I tell people that my favorite drink is an eggnog chai latte, and they're like, well, that just sounds awful. And I'm like, but it's so amazing.
I don't know how people cannot like eggnog. It's
Starbucks stopped making it because people didn't buy it.
Checkers had, like, an eggnog shake at one point. I would go to Checkers just to get a fucking eggnog milkshake. Eggnog's wonderful. Anyway.
I'm so happy now. Like, beyond anything, I feel like we've really made a connection this past year.
Because we both like eggnog. That's
what yeah.
Next, from Polakowski. I love listening to the podcast, but college is making it hard for me to keep up. I'm pretty sure I'm almost a month behind, but it's still fun to listen to you guys exchange the manga and football. Wrestling goes over my head, sadly. Two questions this month. First, do you guys ever consider doing one-shot manga? Like, consider just compiling all the one-shots people suggest and then compiling them into one manga recommendation? Do you have great experience with one-shots? I've read a few that are good. And I actually did think at one point, like, you know, because there are a couple of actually, like, Christmas one-shots that I've seen that I think might serve for good reading, like, in December or something like that. I don't know. That is a good idea, though, I think. You know, maybe, you know, doing a one-shot special. Mm-hmm. So, that's an interesting idea.
Yeah, I haven't read a whole lot recently. Back in the day, I used to like reading one-shots, especially, like, the one-shots for the popular series, back when Rukio was a pocket-sized ghost who talked to Ichigo, and Luffy... I'm trying to remember what the one-shot for One Piece went. I think, like, Garp was basically his Shanks. It was the same design or something like that. One Piece didn't change too much, but going back to, like, the one-shot for Bleach with Rukia as, like, a pocket person was so weird.
That is very strange. They did kind of have something like that with the mod souls and stuff.
Mm-hmm. I'd have to go. I almost want to.
And then eventually, he just forgot the rookie existed.
Yeah, now she's really pocket sized. But yeah, no.
But you got a Bankai fight, guys. Yeah, so is everyone else. I'm sorry. It'll become obvious why fairly soon, but I've had to re-experience Bleach a lot over the course of the last week, and it just made me go, like, oh god, it sucks so bad now. Anyway, yeah, go ahead.
Is it my question?
No. I thought you were done. Anyway, second, what do you think makes a good adaptation? There have been a lot of video games / media adaptations that manga do, but what do you believe makes the difference between a Pokemon Adventures or Hiramashima writing or Hiramashima written Monster Hunter manga? The only time the whole friendship equals power success made legitimate sense from the Super Mario-kun and Sherlock manga. I've never read that latter one. I don't know what... There's a Sherlock Holmes manga. Super Mario-kun is a very weird one, though.
Is it not related at all to Mario, the Nintendo character?
No, it is, yeah. Oh, okay. It's just fucking weird. There's a lot of weird Mario manga, because there's so many of them, because he's so popular, you know? It's like saying what makes a good manga.
that's
a very difficult question to really answer.
It's basically saying what would make a good manga, or something being adapted into a manga. And I think it's almost kind of how we answered it earlier, too. I mean, carrying the spirit over into a new medium, or if you're going to just reinvent it, just making sure it captures what the original is. So, I mean, you kind of do have to play with the rules of what makes a good manga, but, I mean, if you're going to make a Mario manga, I can't comprehend a Mario manga. He doesn't talk. he's a character who speaks, but, like, doesn't say anything. He's he's still plot to Mario. He rescues a princess and fights a dragon, but there's no story to it. He just goes to wacky, elemental planets.
He says all sorts of different things. He says the title of each game at the beginning.
Yeah, and Mamma Mia! And
Super Mario Galaxy!
So I don't know like that, but I guess like a Sherlock manga, it's like, yeah, making sure you capture the Sherlock spirit, and just making sure it transitions well. That's basically what you just need to do, like capture what makes it enjoyable in that medium and find a way to carry that over to manga and then make it a good manga on top of that. My question then, or do you have any?
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay. This one here, get no name on it. So if you actually get enough donations off Patreon to do an Air Gear episode, would you guys, based off of Nick's opinion of the series, be willing to make the next wrong over that be for the monster only known as Madoka Box? Good luck making it to the next rewards.
That's an interesting idea. We'll keep that in mind, I think. Mm-hmm. I've got to discount that. Maybe we'll end up getting to it naturally anyway. I don't know. Who knows? I don't carry the same vitriol. Like, I can't believe this fucking series for Madoka Box as you do for.
I'm dreading. It's always nice to see the Patreon grow. I'm dreading it getting to that tier. It's been like a moment where I'm like, oh, this is like a double edged sword.
Next question from Satellite of Love. Hello, Chris and Nick. What are some popular ships that you've come across that make little to no sense to you? Some examples I'd go with, Orihime / Okiora. I'm sorry, it is called Okihime.
Is it?
And also he names the Sasuke and Sakura, which I believe is Sasusaku in the fandom. Because, Okiora, he threatened to kill her in every interaction they had. Sasuke and Sakura, he tried to kill her twice, but at least Rod is a thing now.
Popular ships. See, when I read this question initially, I just read what are some ships you've come across that make little no sense. I'm like, all the time I see people with random-ass ships who are, like, characters who never even meet, like Nami and Buggy. Like, they met once. I don't think they even really talked.
Well, some of those are bizarrely popular anyway.
Yeah. Well, I mean, we talked about during the Digimon commentary, where it's like, Gabumon and Joe are, like, comparing, like, what the... I don't think they even talk.
And also one is Jin and Miwa. Miwa's misunderstanding of Jin comes from his feeling towards neighbors, not Jin himself.
Yeah.
I guess that's a popular one. Okay.
Yeah, I can say. I wish I had Annalisa, here or around.
She would tell us about all the World Trigger ships.
Yeah, and I feel like all of them are ones that be like, I don't get that, I don't get that. There's, a couple World Trigger.
World Trigger.
I'm glad that I didn't say something that started with an N, because that would have been really, it would have been a very abrupt end to that podcast.
Oh, God, my right there.
if you thought your Statalizer thing was going to be an abrupt end to last month's episode, I one-upped you, Nick. The only World Trigger ships I really kind of get, like, I get Osamu Kitora. I think I'm the fucking only person really trumpeting it. But, like, I get Emma and Chika, and I've heard, like, Yuma and Chika or something like that. But a lot of the other ones, and maybe it's just because I'm not, you know, a woman or I'm not gay, I just, there's so many boy love ships in that series. I know it's like...
so many good-looking guys! Yeah. Chris. They're just, they've got companionship, and they fight for each other, and only in the bonds of battle people want to fucking...
Brawler just brought one up. Yuma Jin is extremely popular. I don't get it. I don't get it. Like, I can't comprehend. I'm like, why?
They're both cool and competent?
They've talked to one another, I guess. Like, I don't... It's never like Yuma had a moment where he's just like, Jin, you're so smart and handsome with, like, his hand on his... Like, I feel like you need that. Like, I don't know. Maybe I'm reading into it, because it's not like Chika ever, or, like, Kitora having a moment where she was taking her shirt off and Osamu walked in. He's like, nice rack! And she's like, oh, you! Like, that's, like, the romantic chemistry, but I just don't see somebody, like... It would be like, Azuma and Tachikawa. And I'm like, I feel like those characters have been in the same room together, but they don't interact or something like that. I don't see why they'd be paired up. And that would go for most series, I guess.
I guess we could sort of break this down a little bit by some series. Yeah, I'm totally on, I'm totally with the satellite here in terms of Okihime. I don't get it. I don't understand. I literally, back when I made my, Downfall of Bleach thing, I did this long string of other complaints I could have had, I could have put in the video, and one of them was just, why the fuck is Okihime a thing? Because it's this really popular ship, and it's just like, I guess at the end they understand each other a little bit, but he was threatening to kill her all the time, and then he was going to kill her before Ichigo killed him. And then...
Wouldn't he save her at one point, or am I thinking something else?
Grimmjow saved her.
That's right, Grimmjow. Maybe that's one I could... I don't think it's still a thing, because it's still like... I don't know, it just doesn't make sense to me. Maybe I can understand that, but yeah.
Up until, basically, because Okiura's whole thing was just like, you are a tool, basically, for Aizen, and so, you know, I'm going to do whatever the fuck he says, and then he was trying to constantly tear down her self-confidence, because that's where, you know, she got strength to use her powers and stuff. And then at the very end, he's like, oh, this, I understand.
Did he ever show kindness to her in any way, shape, or form?
Because he was an asshole.
And I know that's like
that. He was a heartless asshole until he finally died. He was like, oh, there is a heart that exists between us, or something like that. It's weird.
That's like a thing, though. Like, abusive ships. There's a game out there. Yeah. It's called, like, Amnesia or something like that. Well, it's like a dating sim where, like, one of the characters will just kidnap your character and fucking keep you in a cage or some shit like that is one of the romance options. Shippers. And I'm like...
A lot of shippers are really big into hatred turning into love. That's, like, Draco and Hermione was a really popular ship for a while. And, like, because, you know, he was like, oh, mudblood, so on and so forth. And it was like, oh, but they're both, you know, attractive people, and they really hate each other. But then that hatred is so passionate it can turn to love, or something like that, you know. Let's see. Other Bleach ships that don't make sense to me. Hinamori and Aizen, it's creepy. I understand why, but it's creepy. He's like her dad, and her abusive dad at that.
Yeah, I was like, even if you go to the relationship they had post, like, pre-reveal, it's still weird.
Let's see, what else? Let me just, like, go down the list of...
Does people. Chad ever get paired with anyone? Does Chad get a chance for love?
I mean, it's anime, and there are shippers, so everyone has been paired with everyone, but I don't think that there are...
Let me see. Fanfic.
I don't think that there are any mega popular shippers.
Bleach, Chad, X... Well, the first option was Chad and Ichigo, so this is not going well.
Because they're best friends, yeah. You know. Well, everyone's been paired with the Rihime, so yeah, whatever.
Ooh, I like this one. Chad Wants Love, Chapter 4, Bleach Fanfic.
Going over to Naruto, let's see here.
Sasuke. Oh, hey, it's Chad and Love, Nick. Oh, Love's a dude, never mind. Wait.
Nope.
Well, one of them's a chick, though. There's a lot of female pronouns being used here.
Stop it right now. Let's see. Sasuke got paired with everyone. Naruto got paired with everyone. Hinata got paired with everyone. Sakura got paired with everyone. Just like... I mean, like, those I all understand because they're just such popular characters. Even Hinata, yeah. I mean, it's just like... Everyone got paired with everyone in that series, basically. And it's such fervent shipping went on with that that, I mean, nothing surprised me, really. Yeah.
And there's no pairing in One Piece because romance.
Yeah. If you do romance. Any shipping in One Piece, they're already in love with the adventure.
Yeah, it's Luffy and romance. Zoro and... Or Luffy and adventure. Zoro and adventure. Nami and adventure. They're all paired up already.
It's a polyamory. Yeah.
Alright, you want me to go on to the next one?
Yeah.
Alright, this is from Michael Hurt. Hey, Chris, keep Rolo T. Larios, and Nick, why am I a ruler of time? Get us to $2,000 a month on Patreon, and I'll explain in a world trigger to my heart and back to our fan, Vic Freeman. Hope you guys are doing well and having a good Q&A session. Have a couple questions for you. Question the first. As we all know, Naruto had a pretty crummy last final arc that was drawn out way too long. Well, don't say that when Kishimoto's offering you your one last drive out of the Arizona desert, good sir. However, Kishimoto was able to make a good follow-up with a Naruto Gaiden focused on Sarada. So with Bleach also in its supposed final arc, do you think even if the final chapters are of the current quality, or of the quality of the current chapters, could Taikubo make an actually decent mini-series sequel about the generation after Ichigo and company? And if so, whose kid or lineage would you like to see get any focus on? Let's first answer the question.
If characters are going to hook up in Bleach the same way they did in Naruto, Ichigo and Rukia all the way. I don't think Kubo is interested in doing that type of thing. Because I think that he has demonstrated over the last several years that he is interested in doing a bunch of things as opposed to doing one thing really well. I don't think that he would have the focus to do a mini sequel series focused on a very small group of characters. He would just be like, okay, and then this fight's done, and I'm going to go on to this one, and then this one, featuring different characters constantly. If he were legitimately interested in doing something that focused on a smaller cast, I'm sure he could do it well, because, I mean, early Bleach was like that. It had, you know, smaller cast, and things were built up over a long period of time and stuff. I don't think that he is interested in doing that, and so I don't think he would.
If you were to have a sequel series that followed a character, I feel like the only one I'd really be interested in is if Orihime had a kid who kind of inherited her powers. I feel like you could make a series out of that. Like, that might be worth following. Like, I don't know, she has a son, and her son has these powers too, and he's trying to, like, cope with the idea, like, oh, hey, I can kind of remake reality if I need to, and it's, you know, dealing with the pressures of that. I think you can make a story out of that that might be kind of cool, and building to a relationship with his mom or something like that. Just like some short little story within that. But that's about all I could really see having a ton of interest in. Unless you did like the first... Remember when Bleach did that time skip and it looked like kind of everything reset? And
Everyone just got haircuts.
Yeah, everyone just got longer hair. But it looked like Karin was kind of following in Ichigo's footsteps, and she was starting to, like, deal with the ghosts around Karakura Town. If you started doing... If you did, like, a small spin-off series of that, maybe not even necessarily involve Soul Reapers in it at all, but just Karin basically being what Ichigo was at the start of the series, this person who could see ghosts and kind of solve their problems, that I think I'd be interested in following. It's not directly lineage exactly, but that'd be kind of a sequel series, I think, worth exploring a little bit. It's like
I guarantee you... You know, any idea that you could possibly name, Kubo could probably do it well if he really tried, but then he wouldn't, so. Mm-hmm.
Second question here. If you could combine the talent of any two manga artists, like the ability, like Oda's ability of world building and story progression, mixed with Hiro's insane ability of getting a ridiculous amount of content out each month, who would you fuse together? And before you ask, Chris, you can't say world peace because that one's too obvious. I feel like that's unnecessary, good sir. That's not even the one I'd go with. I mean, maybe it was at that moment when you said I was, but now I have something better. I would take the narrative and the strategic elements of World Trigger, and I would combine them with the artistic ability of, oh god, what's his name? The Nisekoi mangaka. Whose name I'm completely blanking on right now.
It also escapes me. Yeah.
I'm blanking on his name right now, and I deeply apologize. Because the reason I want to say is because that would be the art style of that, with the way Nisekoi handles expressions, comedic moments, and also, as we've seen more recently, handling action moments in a pretty legitimate way. I feel like those would go to solve one of the big issues a lot of people have with World Trigger, where you're just like, ah, you know, the art style of the faces don't seem to do a whole lot for me. I feel like those two would be a nice blend. Komi Noshi. There you go.
You know what? Fuck it.
Nick's like, you didn't say I couldn't say World Peace.
You know what? Fuck it. Let's take Hiro and let's take Tosh from Shokugeki no Soma, so that we can take Hiro's insane desire to have fuck tons of fan service that makes no goddamn sense, and then Tosh's ability to make it like really weirdly hot. And then Hiro will finally get his rocks off, and he'll actually, you know, do stuff.
You're basically like, I want a porn of fairy tale that could finally get Hiro to focus on something else.
Basically, yes.
Hiro's like, finally, someone has drawn a porn of my series that is the quality that I desire. Oh.
Anyway.
I jerk off at this every day.
And he never got anything done ever again. No, my plan is backfired.
Every time the editor comes in, he's just like, oh, it's like I stepped into a spider's nest. It's just Hiro in a thick cocoon of his own stride semen everywhere. It's just like, oh, they really shouldn't have given you that manga.
Oh, God, what a fucking visual.
This is the last one from Michael. He says, as of the time I asked this question, you're about to have your special monthly episode where you did full radio plays of various chapters. However, one of the choices I want wasn't on the poll, and I wanted to see if you could cover it. Chris, do you think you could use Doflamingo's Throne Wars speech from One Piece's 801 in your Heath Ledger Joker voice? Unfortunately, that wasn't the one we went with, and the episode has been done at this point. But I feel like if Doflamingo shows up again in the series or has anything like that, or if maybe the next time we do a weekly manga recap lives, if there hasn't been necessarily a great One Piece chapter since then, perhaps we could put that one up for the vote in place of it. So the option will be out there.
Oh, more shipping questions. Next question. No name on this. Which two characters from different series do you guys think would be perfect for each other romantically? Now we're getting into crossover shipping. That's an entirely different monster. The stuff people come up with is weird.
I think we should have Osamu and Hinata. It is a perfect relationship. They will never speak to each other. They will never be able to admit their feelings for one another. They're both going to be just quiet wallflowers looking at each other from afar and never enacting on it.
And then people like eventually write something where it's like they're just completely out of character. Osamu is like this tremendous sex god, and he not as a total bitch to him.
He walks out of the shower shirtless with like an 18 pack, and he's just he like walks out of the shower. He's the fucking Old Spice guy, and he's just like, hello, Hinata.
And he's like, shut the fuck up, you asshole. Don't look at me that way.
You shut your mouth.
And it's like, god damn it.
Stop eye fucking me.
It's like, god damn it, why the fuck did you write this if they're just gonna have them be completely accurate?
They hate each other. They don't even interact in a positive way. They just despise one another.
That is one thing, honestly, that is the one thing that I don't understand about, like, fanfiction, is the stuff that includes character bashing that requires them to be completely out of character. You know, like, demonizing one character so that you can help justify two characters that third person would be in the way of, unless they did somehow to rape one of them or something.
Like Rukia stomps on Ichigo's nuts one day when they're just finished banging. Yeah. She's like, you suck, and he's just like goes crying to Orihime, just be like, Rukia is so mean to me.
And then they just fuck. You know, yeah. And then Rukia ends up dying from cancer.
She kicked Ichigo's balls and contracted foot cancer somehow.
yeah, stuff like that. I mean, it's just like, I don't get it. It's like, you know, I understand shipping can be fun and stuff. I just don't understand people take it so passionately that they have, that they hate other characters because of it. It's weird. I haven't actually answered the question. I should have been thinking about this instead of goofing around.
Oh, two characters, Nick. Fuck. Think of like a male character you like in one series and a female character.
Help me name a... What's a good female character that's oblivious of everything?
Oblivious of everything? Like naive? Yeah. Like Onodera?
No. Like oblivious to like things going on around them, basically. Like an airhead, I guess.
Oh, okay. An airhead.
Not necessarily all the time, but just like, you know, it's a running thing that they like miss stuff.
I was trying to say like Alice in Food Wars a little bit.
No.
Spacey. Just someone like a female character who misses things.
Isn't there like a One Piece character who does that? There's gotta be.
I mean, there's a crap ton of One Piece characters, but one's not coming immediately to mind.
I just gotta go. Come on, fucking hell. Ah.
Is there a male character that fulfills?
I already have a male character in mind. Is the thing.
But is there a male character?
I guess you could do another male character. I don't know. Yeah. I don't care. Another forgetful male character. Fuck. God damn it. I've already come up with one half of
the grinding halt.
I can do the joke. God damn it. This is so horrible.
I don't know. Like, Kana gets drunk a lot and misses things.
Fine. Kana and Soma. So then they'll be completely oblivious of what's going on all the time. Because Soma doesn't get things, see? This is obvious social cues and stuff, and he doesn't remember things going on that everyone else is remembering and stuff.
Alright.
So then they'll never realize that they're supposed to be together. See.
Fortunately, that pairing works against that, because Connell will just get drunk and try to fuck him anyway, because it's her character trait now.
It's really creepy because someone was underage. Anyway.
Not fairy tale world. Alright. Is that all for that one?
I think it was. Hang on. That was the extent of the question, yeah.
Oh, okay. I want to hear them from Satellite of Love. Dear Y-Rotten Roller T, just based on structure and premise, do you think it is possible for a character in Food Wars to be broken?
It's possible?
It'd be hard. It would essentially be like if they can literally control food and change its makeup. Like if it's like, that steak, I can make it taste like lettuce. Your steak tastes like lettuce or something like that. Like, oh no! But I don't know. It's hard to be broken in a series that's kind of grounded like that.
Yeah, I mean, partially because, you know, the way the competition takes place is it's, you know, individual efforts which then judge DMs one another. So it would have to be something... It would, because then you would just have, you know...
Maybe the closest would be that dude who can basically copy everyone else's dish and then do it better than them.
Super.
Maybe that's even the closest.
He lost. Yeah. So, but I think that... Because, like, even if you have something that's like, you know, oh, it's so good, you know, no one could ever possibly match this, then it's not a matter of it being broken, it's just he's really, really good, and then the other character, it falls to them to try to match it. You know, it's not like, oh, you never have a chance or whatever like that, because of the nature of the competition. I mean, this chapter of, the last chapter of Somo that we had, you know, had, like, Azon cheating, basically. But that's different. You know, it would have to be something like you said, where basically not only is the person's dish incredibly good, but they can just magically make the other person's dish seem like shit. It would be very difficult just because of the way the competition is structured for that to happen. Mm-hmm.
So while possible, not very likely in that series. This is followed up with, also, what are some of your least favorite examples of broken characters?
Edge is in.
Yeah, I feel like we kind of nailed that one last time we did this. That, and I guess mine will probably be Urza. It's like that John Cena thing. I'm going to get beat up for this entire thing, and then at the end I'm just going to do one move that beats you with no real knowledge, no real thought behind it. I'm just better than you because friendship.
And then, I mean... God. It's... Other stuff is also playing back to me. Aizen really annoyed me at times, but he is a little different because he is the villain. Although the example that is named by Satellite is Madara. Aizen at his worst, I would be like, oh, he's so fucking broken. But you can forgive a lot of stuff if the character is compelling as well, which is why I named Edgison off the bat, because I fucking hate him. And I think that, because this one it will actually, like, finish up all the questions we got last month, so I think we could just do this and then wrap up.
Yeah, no, that sounds like a plan.
This comes from Kit Kat. Dear Rilla T and Y, the ruler of time, I'm a longtime family member with a serious question. My boyfriend and I have had a serious argument lately. We need your help to settle it.
Jin cross Miwa or Jin cross Yuma? Which is hotter?
Which is better? Miracle Whip or mayo? I've never had Miracle Whip. I'll say mayonnaise, I guess.
I'm like, can neither be an option? If I had to have one, I guess mayo, maybe? I mean, that Miracle Whip is just mayonnaise, isn't it? Like, just a,
I don't know.
It's slightly different. Well, let me go to the old Google machine. Miracle Whip. I mean, my first thought was like, is it like Cool Whip? But no, that's different. Miracle Whip. It's a dressing manufactured by Kraft Foods and sold throughout the United States and Canada. Its ingredient is... it's basically mayonnaise. It's not mayonnaise. It's close to it.
I can't believe it's not mayonnaise.
It's essentially... But no, if I had to go with one of the two of them, I'd probably say mayonnaise, just because I don't like any kind of brand stuff. Like, that kind of... it's like... Miracle Whip, I'm just like, ugh, like it's just a thing you made or something like that. I can't like put it into words. I think it's like a store bought thing. I couldn't make this on my own. I can't make Miracle Whip or something like that, you know?
Interesting. Okay.
I don't know. But I don't eat mayo, period. It's not something I particularly have had a big fan. Oh, God, I just grossed myself out. My mom used to eat mayonnaise and cheese sandwiches.
Why would you do such a thing?
I don't know. The stroke makes so much more sense now.
Oh. Is that another part of the question we have to answer too?
Oh no, I made myself sad.
This one is actually a manga question. If you could pick one chef from Food Wars to cook all of your meals, who would it be and why?
My mom's who makes the best mayo and cheese sandwiches. I'll go with what's her name? The American Bikini Girl who does all the meat stuff. Nikki, I go with her since meat's a primary part of my diet. I usually have like a ground beef or ground chicken for just about, you know, both meals and, you know, like lunch and dinner. I think she'd be able to make a lot out of that.
That's an interesting question. I don't know. I don't think that anyone in Food Wars would actually like, you know, meet my diet habits. They're just like all over the place because each of them are like super specialized and stuff. I would say Soma because he's the most general, but
he's also like comfort food a little bit.
Yeah, he would also throw in random like experiments every now and then to fuck with me and be like, stupid kid.
Well, let's see, you got the Aldini brothers, Italian cooking. You have I don't actually know if you're a seafood guy at all, but you have
not really.
Kurokiba. Hayama was just spices, right? That was kind of his thing, spices and fragrance.
I'm not a very spicy food type of person, though.
So. Well, it wasn't spicy as in hot, though. It was just sort of... Well, I guess that's going to be a part of it eventually, though.
Yeah. That would be, like, his specialty, so...
You know, the Alice's just special food machines and advanced scientific techniques.
That seems probably, like, too high grade for my taste.
There's the meat girl again. Megumi was
vegetables
garden. There was a guy there at a smokehouse in Polaris Storm. Chinese cooking food, kuga.
No one would ever want to eat Chinese food every day.
Well, it's not that Chinese food. Yeah, this is.
I know, but he's also specifically like one reunion and stuff.
Soma's dad is the cult around the world kind of guy, like foods from all over the world, global.
That might. You know, be, let's go with him because he's like a perfected version of Soma. So.
But you're gonna be getting introduced to a lot of stuff you're not familiar with. You can't be like, if you're not an adventurous person when it comes to food, he's gonna be hell for you.
That's a good point.
Because that's a dude who's like, oh, hey, I found this mushroom in the fucking Himalayan mountains that works perfectly with this dish. You're just like, ew, mushrooms.
You know what?
He slaps you.
You know what? Let's just do Akumi too, because then I know what I'm getting into.
You're like, meat safe. Meat safe. Is there a Pop-Tart chef in this academy? They're really good about making
you
sure
don't
the middle.
Need a Pop-Tart chef.
They're really good about making you, sure the middle was still hot, but they didn't burn the edges. It's a very precise talent.
I don't toast my Pop-Tarts.
What kind of monster are you, Nick? This is what Soma's dad wouldn't cook for you. You don't toast Pop-Tarts, but you were going to take his dad and all the shit he was going to bring?
Can you imagine I have this world-class chef working for me, willing to prepare all my meals, and every day I'm just going to be like, hey, man, go to Publix and get me more Pop-Tarts.
He's like, I just made you a pasta with an ostrich fetus in it, because it's amazing, and you just want Pop-Tarts again. As he's opening up the package and walking towards the microwave, you slap it out of his hand like, no! We've been over this! I don't like them cooked! He just breaks down crying at that point.
And I'm like, oh no! Now I'm the antagonist of Shokugeki no Soma! Oh, first it was a zombie with his bullshit holier-than-thou tastes, and now it's me.
It's the one. The dude who just couldn't be satisfied. All of the chefs are like, surely there's something he'll eat, right?
Oh, this was the exact right question to end on. Oh, God. All right. Thank you, everyone, for joining us for the Q&A episode of Weekly Manga Recap. Special thanks go out to our Patreon supporters who are making bullshit episodes like this possible. We'll have, if you're listening to this live, we will be recording our regular episode tomorrow on twitch.tv/RoloT. And be sure to follow us on Twitter for updates. He's at RoloT, and I'm at Y Ruler of Time. Also, we have at WMR Podcast. For specifically manga-related stuff. Okay, that's it.
Alright. We'll be here next time, guys, the regular episode, and we'll do your Q&As again in December, so make sure you send them in. Bye, everybody.
Okay, I started having trouble breathing.